Welcome to the Big Careers Small Children podcast. My name is Ferina Hefti. I believe that no one should have to choose between becoming a CEO and enjoying their young children. For much too long, amazing people, like I'm sure you listening right now, have found themselves stuck on the career ladder when they have children. And that leads to gender inequality in senior leadership, because those people don't progress to senior leadership, and the same stale, often male, middle-class people leading our organizations. We must change this together, and I hope that many of you listening right now will progress to the most senior leadership roles that you like, where you can make the decisions that make our world a better place. Outside of the podcast, I am the CEO and founder of the social enterprise Leaders Plus. We exist to help working parents progress their careers to senior leadership in a way that works for you and for your families. We have free events and resources on leadersplus.org, where you can download helpful toolkits such as on returning from maternity leave, share parental leave, securing a promotion, dealing with workload challenges, or managing as a dual career couple. We also have an award-winning fellowship community, which is global, for working parents who have big dreams for their careers but don't want to sacrifice their family. You'll join an absolutely wonderful group of people, a very tight-knit, supportive group of parents who have your back. Together, you'll explore what your career aspirations are, and you'll get advice from senior leaders who are also working parents about how to achieve those aspirations. You'll get new ideas to combine your hopes for your careers with your hope for your family, and you are supported by people who are experiencing what you're experiencing yourself. I'm really delighted that a larger majority of our fellows have made tangible changes following the program, be that becoming more senior in their roles, working shorter hours, having better flexible working arrangement. They always impress me so much with the courage that they instill in each other to do what is right for them without apologizing for having a family or apologizing for wanting that top job. Details are on leadersplus.org/fellowship. This week I'm chatting to Liz Willett about her work getting flexible working at all levels onto the agenda. She tells me what the people who get flexible working requests have in common and how to get one agreed yourself, either today or in the future. Enjoy the conversation. Lovely to chat to you again.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Verena. My name is Elizabeth Willett, so everyone calls me Liz. You can call me Liz. And I run Investing in Women, which is a job board and recruitment site which helps people find flexible part-time and remote jobs. And obviously those forward-thinking companies that want to hire people that want to work on a more flexible basis. In my family, I've got my husband, Henry, and two children, two girls called Emily and Annabelle, and also a dog called Dougal, who's a Labradoodle, and yeah, that's who's in my immediate family.
And can you tell me one thing you used to believe about combining a big career with young children that you don't believe anymore?
Do you know what? I was thinking about this just before we jumped on the call, and I used to think it could be done because, you know, I had worked with, I've been at one of the big four accounting firms in their in-house recruitment team. And so I had seen some amazing women that were like partners in the firm, but they were full-time, had a nanny at home. And I knew that if I wanted children, that wasn't the life setup I wanted. So I didn't think it was possible to have a big career if you weren't working full-time.
Interesting. And what made you change your mind, do you think?
Do you know what? I think actually since setting up my business, working flexibly and then realising there's some amazing women that have done it, and whether that's been for themselves on a self-employed basis or actually in corporate, but actually talking to women, interviewing them for my podcast and hearing their stories. And it's very easy, I think, to see something from the outside, but actually when you speak to somebody and you realise, you know, potentially all the challenges they've had when their children have been small, and everyone seemed to have made it work, and people do work part-time and then continue to have big careers.
Mm-hmm. So do you think you have to go freelance or self-employed or set up your own business to have?
I don't, but I think you have to have the confidence to advocate for what you want. And that is something I've learned, that the people that actually have the confidence, and this is the word that has been repeated talking to people, and I don't know if I've got it. So I'm like, hats off to those people. They all say I was bullshy. And I asked for what I said. And it wasn't even asked. It was a said. This is what I need. This is what I'm going to deliver. And you are going to offer it to me. And then they got it. But it obviously takes a lot to be that word bullshy.
I couldn't agree more. And I think the reason actually is because the society and workplaces are not set up for working parents. So you have to constantly craft your own setup, your own system. And that's exactly, then you need to be bullshy, isn't it? Because you need to be, and it's quite tiring to always be bullshy, but that is the way to get the type of arrangements.
I think so. I've realised people don't give you things. And I think that's it. I think we're taught, aren't we? If you put your head down, work hard, you'll be recognised. And actually, no. The people actually that seem to get ahead are the ones that say, that put their hand up, say, I'm going for that promotion, but I'm going for it on my terms, and I'm going to deliver this, that, the other. And they make it very hard then for the person to say no.
Exactly.
That request.
Exactly. So is there, I mean, you have got tons of experience of getting people part-time jobs also in senior levels. And in addition to being just courageous and not scared to ask, is there anything else to add to the secret sauce to get to a yes?
I think it is about being courageous, but I think it's also recognising why your employer may say no, and then addressing that in the request, because then they can't, it's difficult for them to say no, because you've already addressed it and said how you're going to overcome it. So I think that it would be my word of advice, is to think about what the objections are going to be and how you're going to overcome those objections. And, you know, for example, a lady I interviewed, she's now CEO of a water utilities company. So people continue to have big careers after children. I absolutely believe that. But when her children were little, she wanted to work part-time. She saw her dream job. It was a promotion. She knew that she wouldn't take it if it was full-time. So she went to the potential manager and said, I will always be in the top quartile in terms of performance. If I'm not, then we will have a conversation. And it's just having that attitude. And then it's very hard for them to say no, because you were already addressing any fears.
And what's the most common fear, would you say, that people have?
I think the common fear is that people will say, oh, in terms of what employers worry about, that the work won't get done, I think, or clients won't be responded to, things will get missed. The other, like, what's going to be effect on the team? Is it going to open the floodgates? Is everyone else going to want flexible working?
And that client bit is an important one, because especially in the current economic climate, people do worry about whether or not the clients are going to be happy. So what do you answer to that when you say, well, actually, I'm a recruitment consultant, but I would like to work just 4 days a week? And then they say, well, our clients need you 5 days. What would be your recommendation of how to answer them?
I mean, I think people are so much more understanding, particularly since the pandemic. And, you know, I message a lot of my clients, obviously recruiters, and I get a lot of out offers because people have their non-working day. And I just know it's going to get picked up on the next day. I mean, I'm a huge fan of job sharing. I don't know why there is not more job sharing, because if you have a role that does need 5 days a week coverage, then I think you can offer that absolutely on job shares, because that ensures you've got that client coverage. I think it's so much better for individuals as well, because there is a temptation for people to pick up their phone on their days off and respond to things and not actually take that day off, and they end up giving like 5 days a week but getting paid for three or four. But job sharing, yeah, you get that client coverage all week, and also it gives that person that is in that job share time to, you know, switch off and know that the job is still being covered.
And then on the flip side, if you're already in a recruitment process and it's a full-time role, but you actually secretly wanted part-time, when do you think people should raise that?
I personally think around the first interview, because maybe towards the end of the first interview, because by that point you have impressed them, hopefully you've impressed them, you've shown them, you know, who you are, what you're capable of. you don't want to go too far down the line and wait if it cannot be done flexibly. And there are obviously some jobs that can't. I think there's very few that can't, but there probably is a couple that can't. You don't want to get all the way down the line and then waste your time and potentially their time as well by asking for something that cannot be offered. But if you ask at the end of the first interview, maybe after you've had that first interview, if they give you that positive feedback and just say, that's really good, you know, before you get invited to second interview, I'm actually looking for part-time, would they consider it? I think that is probably the best time to ask, because you've had that chance to impress them. If you ask for it too early, you haven't had a chance to impress them at that point. Whereas after a first interview, I think it's probably about the right time. You haven't gone too far down a process and wasted your time if they can't offer it.
Absolutely. And if you are already working for an employer and you want to change your flexible working arrangement, I find that sometimes the reason why employers are hesitant is because they're scared things can go wrong, and they're scared that they will look bad as a director having signed off this only job share in the whole company. And how do you make it less scary for your boss to sign something like that off?
I found that speaking to people, how they've sold it is more of a trial. It's not a permanent thing. It's like, let's try it for 3 months. I will stay in the top quartile of performers. If I'm not, we'll have that conversation and let's review in 3 months. And then it's not been that big a commitment for their managers. It's just a 3 month trial to see how it goes, and then we got to the end of the 3 months and they've said, it's working for me, is it working for you? And you know, 9 times out of 10 the manager will say yes, and then they can carry on with that arrangement. But I think it does make it less scary if you sort of propose it maybe for three months and then, you know, see how it goes.
Interesting. We find that there are really big differences between employers as well. Some talk a lot and invest a lot in trying to get awards for flexible working or family friendliness. And then others, I generally hear consistently good stories about how supportive they are. But it's so hard to spot that from the outside when you are in a recruitment process. Do you have any tips about how to identify the employers that are truly exceptional to...
A lot of employers, if you read the ads, then they, you know, the ones that are good will, I think, have more than just a standard diversity. You know, like we've got jobs this morning, for example, and the school hour admin roles, and they're saying that in the ad, you know where you're sort of standing when it comes to those ads. I mean, obviously big corporates do have like often just a standard diversity inclusion. But I would say go on LinkedIn, follow some of those people that work for those organisations, have a look at the type of posts they're making. I mean, we're recording this just after Boots, so soon after Boots have told their admin staff to go in 5 days a week, back to the office 5 days a week. So you Google, have a look. Is there those negative stories about those employees in the paper? Are you reading about employees in the paper that have taken that employer to tribunal for whatever reason? You should start painting a picture. Or are you following people on LinkedIn, employees, and they're posting really positive, happy posts, and then may, you know, indicate that that's a positive, happy place to work?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think there is also something about using, being a covert operation person. So especially once you're through to the second or third round, I would suggest it's not a bad idea to try to find a friend who has a friend who works for that employee to understand exactly what's going on. Because with the best will of the world, sometimes that online research is still, it's really tricky, I find.
I think so. And Glassdoor, I mean, obviously Glassdoor has its place, but it will be overly negative. I mean, most people will go on and write a review if they had a bad experience, won't they? So I would probably read it, but take it with a bit of a pinch of salt.
Yeah, but it does fill me with hope that there are clearly some employers who are interested in supporting flexibility because they're putting their money where their mouth is, i.e. they're advertising for jobs with your organisation. Now I'm just thinking out loud. I think one thing is probably have a look at your website and see who's there, who's generally, because that's money, right? It's about where are they generally not just talking about stuff, but are they putting budget towards attracting flexible talent.
Absolutely. And I mean, I've had a lot of podcasts as well recorded with people obviously in corporate, so you can go back through those and you can listen and get a feel then about that organization and the culture and how they support their employees as well. So
what's your podcast called again?
Called Work It Like a Mum.
Very cool title. Interesting. Yeah, and I think it is clearly like the fact that they are putting money towards attracting people working flexibly, that means it makes business sense. Now, a lot of people that I interact with, some of our fellows on the fellowship program at the beginning, when they start the program, they are unsure. It's almost like a favor if the employer gives them flexible working. In your opinion, what can they be confident in? That why is it actually a good thing for the employer?
I mean, there's so many reasons. Obviously, there's lots of studies that show that employers that employ people that work flexibly are more productive, they're more profitable. They also, you know, if they've got a diverse workforce, they're obviously better reflecting their customer base and, you know, tailor that messaging and understand their customers better as well. But I mean, a big thing is retention. A lot of people I've spoken to say they don't take jobs or leave if those flexible working requests are rejected. And I know in recruitment how much it costs to recruit. Like the fee, it's not just the recruitment fee, which, you know, for a £40,000 job, it's about £8,000. If you went through an agency, it's a lot of money. And then you have all the training costs on top of that. You have time where you're training that individual while they're getting upskilled in the job. It's expensive. It would be cheaper just to say yes to those flexible working requests, because you're retaining that knowledge, you're retaining that person, you don't have that gap where that, you know, a new person is getting upskilled and you don't have those recruitment fees. So it's cheaper.
We're recording this in mid-March 2024. What can you say about the economy? Do you sense that there is still a real demand to keep people, or is it much easier now for employers to recruit new staff when people leave?
Depends what role you're recruiting for. It really does. I mean, there's some roles like home-based admins where they will get lots of applications, where there's some that are like a bit more niche, where certain legal roles or tech roles where they're going to struggle and you're going to try and keep those people. But I think any role you have, if you have the right person in that role that's doing brilliantly and they know the position, they know your systems, they know your customers, why would you not try to keep them? Why would you not? I would rather keep somebody that knew my business on hours that work for them than have that gap again of trying to hire somebody, training them. And it can take six months at least, before, depending on the role, before someone's up to speed. And it just does not make business sense.
Absolutely. And understanding the overall trends within flexible working. So you already mentioned that there's some roles where employers will be more interested in supporting flexible working, for example, tech or legal, so more specialist roles, where it's really hard to replace people. Are there other trends that you see right now in flexible working?
I mean, unfortunately, I have seen the trend a lot, that not my clients, with this return to the office like Boots, like other employers. And I do, there is a bit of tension, I think, between what people want and what employers want. And I think employers, I don't know, because I don't think there's any evidence personally that people are more productive 5 days a week in an office. But maybe it's a case of they're looking at what their competitors are doing, feeling a little bit, they want to, you know, it's that herd mentality. I don't know. But I think that is the big thing at the moment, is the tension. But I do genuinely think hybrid will work out, will prevail, because that is the number one thing. And it's not just me, all my recruiter friends, regardless of sector, the first thing candidates ask, and any candidate, it's not just a mum thing or a woman thing, what's the flexibility on offer? And you see like the Gen Zs coming through that have obviously done their degrees online. They're used to being, more used than we were to being at home online working. So I think 5 days a week in the office, I think that is history, but I think there's going to be that tension over the next year or so.
Interesting. And I'm curious, you have lots of recruiter friends. Recruiting is one of the fastest paced, very competitive, very target-driven industry. In that environment, do you see people switching off and working part-time, not just flexibly, but actually not being online for a day?
Recruiters.
Mm-hmm.
It is difficult because it's a sales job, like any sales job, and you are targeted and you have KPIs. But when I first started in recruitment, and I started in 2007, it was 8:30 till 6 minimum. If you got in at 8:30, you were considered late, and left at 6, you were leaving early. And I thought I would never be able to do this job flexibly. But I work from home now. I do it in school hours. I see a lot of my peers and contemporaries doing the same. I think the big agencies are still target driven and probably are still a little bit bums on seats. But that is because their model is recruiting people to be recruiters without experience. So the vast majority of their consultants will have no experience and need training and probably do. And that is probably another bit of the tension, isn't it? They were when more junior employees maybe do need a bit of training. I see a lot of my contemporaries that started with the same time as me, working flexibly, working from home, set up agencies, and they're all remote first. And those agencies are growing and they're really flexible. And so I think there is a new generation of recruitment companies coming through now.
Interesting. And I'm interested in your own personal story. So running a business is tough at the best of times, and then running it in that recruiting space is, I'm sure, even tougher. I'm interested in how you manage your own, I guess, happiness, you know, like stress levels. Like, how do you manage to switch off in that type of environment?
Overly stressed, because do you know what? I used to get really stressed when I first started the business because I didn't understand the tech. And actually, it's a job board. It started as a job board rather than a recruitment site. And maybe in hindsight, I should have just done a recruitment company, like a proper recruitment agency, because that was over my head. And then I've actually pretty early on found a brilliant developer and I just outsourced it. And that, to be honest, took the stress away, because that was my biggest thing, would be the website would be going down. I'd be like, oh my gosh, I do not know how to fix this, and trying to stay up till like 2 a.m. So finding him was probably like the best thing I ever did. And then, I'm not going to lie, it's long hours when you first start a business. It's really only in the past 6 months when I've got to a point where I could hire a recruiter to help me. And she's brilliant. That has helped massively with my work-life balance, because I can give a lot to her, which I couldn't before.
Mm. I would agree, actually. Having the right people and investing in the right people, it makes such a difference. I mean, that never mind going to yoga or anything like that. It is that having the right people has been the best ever thing for my happiness, for sure, as a social entrepreneur.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's nice to employ other people, actually, because, you know, you think, actually, I'm providing you a job, it's healthy, you know, you can do things as well with your families. But yeah, for my happiness, it's definitely been having a good team.
Definitely. I think that's one of the most important things to do if you want to avoid burning out. And I'm interested, just I do need to ask this question. Have you always been so sold on the idea that flexible working is possible? Or was there a time where you thought, well, actually, you might not, you know, this either it's the standard 8 to 6:30, or you have to go freelance?
Yeah, do you know, I wasn't, because I left recruitment for like 1.5 years when I got married. And I left recruitment because I wanted a baby, and we just got married. I wanted a baby. And I thought, there is no way. I knew I didn't want to have a baby and get like a full-time nanny. I knew I wanted to have a baby and be around. And so I left recruitment, did something completely different. Have you heard of Colour Me Beautiful? I was like, you know, when people have their colours done and tell you what colours suit you. So I did that and beauty therapy for 1.5 years. And I did it from home. I had a little home beauty salon and it was going well, but then me and my husband couldn't get pregnant, and I got really depressed. And you know, people were coming going, oh, when are you gonna have children, and you know, your clients and stuff. I thought, sod this, I'm going back to, you know, it was that quite intrusive questions that you don't get, I don't think, actually overly in a corporate environment. So I went back thinking I wouldn't be able to have children, and then went from agency to in-house, and then through IVF did fall pregnant. And but when I said I didn't think you could do it, because A, I'd seen not seen anyone my contemporaries at that point do it particularly, and then also we never even registered part-time candidates when I was in agency. If someone rung in saying they wanted part-time work, we didn't even register them as a candidate. And then when I was in Big Four, never employed someone part-time.
It's interesting because I know, I'm not allowed to name any names, but I know that there are still organizations that have almost no part-time employees. And some of the, I guess, more traditional sectors seem to be slower at catching up, or they have flexibility and part-time, but at a more junior level or middle management.
Yeah, or they'll have their internal roles. They'll be internal rather than client-facing.
Exactly. So you and I clearly are sold on the idea of flexible working. It sounds like your clients are, Leaders Plus partners certainly are. But I just wonder, what can we do to convince the unconvinced?
It's difficult. I think it's the role modelling, isn't it? And seeing other organisations doing it and telling the stories of those organisations and what has been the benefits for them and how they've made it work and how it hasn't impacted their bottom line or their client satisfaction levels. I think it is showing what's possible and highlighting those people, not just with the, you know, not just token people within your own organisation, because I know that all organisations do seem to have a token person, but actually it's also, it sort of maybe is a bit about that token person, but really celebrating them inside the organisation, outside that team as well, and saying this is possible, this has worked for us. And I've got a client that's a mortar producer, and they never had women in their lab, and they wanted women in their lab. It's
they're what
mortar.
Producer?
They're a mortar producer, you know.
Mortar, to make walls. Okay.
Yeah, so it's a very male-dominated business, and they'd never had women in their lab.
Clearly, I don't know enough about that to recognise about, which is such a gender issue. I'm sorry, everybody.
Yeah, I know. I've learned a lot about mortar now. They'd never had women in their lab, so they worked with me. We redesigned the job ads, tried to make them more inclusive, thought about the language that would appeal to women. And they've hired now 4 women on part-time contracts in their lab, and it's the first time they've done it. And that's like the success story that they're sharing within their organisation about, you know, how they did it, and also like the positive impact it's had on that department. And now it's all the other departments are buying into that, that jobs don't need to be full-time, that they don't need to be, you know, they don't need to hire a certain type of person. They can hire someone without experience. So I think it is those success stories and really shouting about them.
I agree. And I think we need to link it to productivity. That's what we need to do, because people are interested in productivity, even people who don't care about flexible working. So if we can show, and research around the 4-day week, for example, shows that there's a clear link with productivity. So
I think it is true. There's this thing, is it called Parkinson's Law, where they say your task will fill up that time. So if I said I'm going to give myself, I'm just using my own example, a day to write a sales page, it would take me that full day. And if I think I'm going to give myself an hour to write it, I would do it in an hour because I wouldn't stop. And I think that is it, isn't it? You do become more productive naturally the fewer hours you get, because you do not waste a second.
Definitely. And the UK has such a problem with productivity. It's one of the lowest in Western Europe. So if we could make the example, I think that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do some research and I'll do a blog post. I'll commit myself on here, so I have to do it, about productivity and flexible working and working parents. I think that's what we need to do. And then the other thing is that I dream, if anybody listens to this and has, you know, a venue or would like to support, I would love to bring granddaughters in with, you know, the granddaughters of board members. So the board members who are now 70, actually maybe needs to be daughters, I'm just thinking this through. But essentially having the very senior, white, old males listening to the daughters about the difference it can make. I think that is what I need to do. So
Do you know what? That is interesting, actually, because somebody, the lady actually that I was referring to, that's now a CEO of a water company, she made her flexible working request, and it was just a coincidence at the same time as her director's daughter had, in another company, had had her flexible working request turned down. And her manager then, director then admitted to her, he said yes, because he knew if he said no, he would be laying Lucy, which was his daughter, down, because he would be as bad as her employer.
So lovely. Oh my goodness, we're so going to do a daughter event. I'll invite you to it.
I think so. But I think
so, any daughters are listening to this and you have a really big shot, that, I'm sorry to be gender specific, but that is what we're looking for, then yeah, please let me know. That would be so fun. Excellent. I feel like I'm committing to way too many things on this podcast, and we should probably wrap it up. But was there anything else that you wanted to share with our listeners that you think our listeners should think about?
I think like talking to people, if you don't ask, you don't get. So I think that is it. And you've got to ask and think about, you know, the objections, and maybe be flexible in thinking, okay, I'm going to do it as a review, you know, 3 month review, and we'll see how it's going in 3 months. And there has to be, I suppose, a little bit of give and take. But then also, employers, who are your customers? If your customers are a mix of, you know, women and men, but you're only employing men that work a certain way, you're not reflecting your customers at all, and the messaging will be wrong. Probably won't make, you know, won't make as much sales. It's definitely worth it for you to employ a more diverse workforce.
Very well said. If people want to find out more about you and your organisation, where should they go? Where can they find the podcast?
Yeah, so the organisation is called Investing in Women. The website is investinginwomen.co.uk. We've got a podcast, Work It Like a Mum. And I am most active on LinkedIn. So if you want to connect with me, it's Elizabeth Willits on LinkedIn.
And you do lives as well, and all sorts of really interesting, engaging events that you can participate in.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much, Marina, for having me.
Not at all. I have got one final question for you, which is, if someone hears this and is considering requesting flexible working, what should be 3 practical things that take maximum 5 minutes that they should do this week to prepare?
In terms of a flexible work, I mean, I think obviously we're coming up to April and the rules are going to change. So get up to speed on the rules and what your rights are. You can now, I think from April, make a request on first day of employment, and you can make it twice a year. So that would be my first bit of advice, get up to speed. Like I said, think about why an employer might say no, and then you can think about the objections and how you're going to overcome them and alleviate any fears. And the other thing, just ask. You haven't got anything to lose by asking. So I think the more people ask, the better, and the more likely, you know, they are going to say yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Very well said. It was lovely to chat to you again, Liz.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you listening. Thank you so much. And I always love to hear from our listeners. If you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, just go to Farina Hefti, and I'd be delighted to hear your feedback and your suggestions, or just have you say hi. Likewise, if you do feel passionately about gender equality and you want to support a female-led podcast, then please do leave a review and share it with a friend. Just because at the moment, podcasting is still a very, very male-dominated environment. Most of the top-charting podcasts are led by men. I really love all the people who've joined from the podcast, our fellowship program. And if you want to do the same, then please head over to leadersplus.org/fellowship in order to get access to a community of support to help you combine an ambitious career with young children together with people who have your back. See you next week.